Yes, indeed. And in just the next 30 seconds or so, I mean, paying a living wage. And Dr. Barber, we are sure that you're talking not only about low-wage workers, but those of us who are unpaid caregivers, because we're workers as well. But Dr. Okay. Barber, recently, recently, you were in West Virginia. Absolutely.
In West Virginia, the hood at the holler. We had white folk, miners, we had black folk from the hood, white folk from the holler, religious leaders saying to Joe Manchin, listen, you cannot filibuster this society, lock down this society, block the 40 People's Act, block the Voting Rights Act, block living wages.
We're out of time. Today's show produced by me. That's Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, including assistant producer Romero Funes and today's audio engineer. I'd also like to thank the Global Justice Ecology Project. If you'd like a copy of today's show, you can contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. And remember to visit our website, sotrueradio.org. And follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at So True Radio. Thank you for listening. This is your host, Margaret Prescott.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. The time is 9 a.m. It's time for Fight the Empire.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fograng, and the show is Fight the Empire. President Biden and President Putin of Russia had their summit meeting in Geneva yesterday. They aired their differences, and they agreed to keep the talks going. Well, this is not bad, considering all the accusations and dumb statements floating around. One of the dumbest statements was made by Biden himself, that Putin has no soul. If you take soul to mean consciousness, is Biden saying that Putin is some kind of zombie? Or does Biden mean that Putin, like many of us, has a soul, but it may not be in super good shape? Biden also called Putin a, quote, killer. But then apparently he had second thoughts. He later downplayed the remark and phoned Putin. They had a discussion, and Putin said he was satisfied with Biden's explanation. Well, this brings to mind an event from 1960. President Eisenhower and his security advisors were discussing troubles in Congo, and Eisenhower ordered the CIA to eliminate Congolese leader Patrice Lumumba. There are witnesses. The man taking notes, Robert Johnson, said there was stunned silence for about 15 seconds, and then the meeting continued. Soon after that, the CIA's poison expert, Dr. Sidney Gottlieb, arrived in Leopoldville with a tube of poison toothpaste. Meanwhile, Lumumba had escaped house arrest and was later killed by the Belgians. Getting back to the summit, another dumb statement is that the meeting itself is a reward for Putin. It's the idea that sharing a stage with Biden somehow elevates Putin beyond his station in the world. There's some kind of arrogance buried here. A summit is not a reward for proper behavior. It's a way for two superpowers to keep their rivalry for destroying the world and a lot of innocent bystanders. They do this by airing their differences and trying to resolve them. One of the differences has to do with election interference. The Russians are said to have hacked the Democratic National Committee in 2016 and released information on the sabotage of Bernie Sanders' campaign. The Russians deny it, and I would say this is information we have a right to know. It's a good time to ask our listeners, do you think that this information that the Russians presumably hacked, do you think we have a right to know, or is this some kind of thing that should be kept secret? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. We'd like to hear your opinion. The U.S. also does its share of hacking, plus some worse forms of interference. In 2014, Ukraine's elected president, Viktor Yanukovych, was forced out of office by a right-wing mob. An American State Department official, Victoria Nuland, was there in the streets of Kiev, passing out cookies to the rioters. She was also recorded talking on the phone with the U.S. ambassador and naming her choice of Ukraine's next president. She also had bad words we can't say on air for the European Union. So this is interference, certainly worse than anything that the Russians have been accused of. But staying with Ukraine, the U.S. accuses Russia of seizing Crimea, which is true enough, but not the whole story. Crimea has been Russian since 1783, when Empress Catherine the Great took it from the Ottoman Empire. At that time, Crimea was populated by Tatars. They were forced to flee into exile. And since then, Russia, Crimea, has been populated by Russian speakers. In 1954, Soviet Premier Nikita Khrushchev gave it to Ukraine without consulting the Crimean people. Well, Crimea's population is mostly Russian, and they seem happy to be once again part of Russia. The ouster of Yanukovych brought other troubles. His votes came mainly from the Russian speakers of eastern Ukraine, and when they saw their elected leader thrown out of office, they rebelled. Now Ukraine, with U.S. support, is fighting these so-called separatists, and we are blaming them for the mess. Well, meanwhile, history keeps... Well, let me ask our listeners, what do you think of what is going on in Ukraine? Do you think that this is some kind of a Russian plot, or do you think that the U.S. has sort of got itself into this predicament? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. Meanwhile, history keeps racing ahead to some kind of conclusion. Humans have been on the planet for more than 200,000 years. Our recorded history is a few thousand years old, and the Industrial Age began only about two or three centuries ago. The question is, will the Industrial Age continue, or will it end? Will it evolve into something better, or will it devolve into what came before? Mineral resources have a limited lifespan. The question is, can we progress without them? What our nation and much of the world is moving toward a future of renewable energy, but the problem is that the technology for renewable energy requires materials that are not renewable and that are growing scarce. One example is solar power requires photovoltaic cells. And wind power uses giant turbines, They require manganese, molybdenum, nickel, zinc, and rare earth metals. Renewable electricity is stored in batteries using copper. Electric vehicles require cobalt, graphite, lithium, manganese, and rare earths. Many of these materials come from a few countries. Most of our cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo, which might account for the maneuvering that we were doing to prevent Patrice Lumumba from taking power back in 1960. China supplies the rare earths, and Argentina and Chile produce most of our lithium. An electric car, according to the International Energy Agency, uses 6 times the minerals of the old-fashioned gas guzzler. Well, all of these materials, all these minerals are growing scarce, with peaks sometime in this century. And when you think of it, a child born this year can be expected to live a long life and live until the end of the century. So anything that happens in the rest of this century could happen in our children's lifetimes. Oil, on which our economy rests, has enough of that for 46 years at current production. Natural gas, there is enough for 58 years. Phosphorus could run out in 50 to 100 years. As to aluminum, there's plenty of bauxite in the ground, but mining and smelting use lots of energy. Coal, there's enough of that for 188 years, but coal is such a dirty burning fuel that we're trying to avoid using it. We're trying to get off of coal. There are 17 rare earth elements, and China supplies 97% of them and says they could be gone in 20 years. And from what I hear, there's even a shortage of sand, which, of course, is a major component of all our concrete structures. And all of this mining and processing uses huge amounts of water, which is left contaminated. It seems like all my life I've heard talk of colonizing Mars, which is a desolate planet. Meanwhile, we are neglecting and sort of destroying our once bountiful, beautiful Earth. I don't know. I'd like to ask our listeners, what do you think? Do you think we should? Do you think we have any reason to colonize Mars, or should we stay here on Earth and keep it the bountiful planet that it is? Give us a call at 503-231-8187. One of the things that President Biden and President Putin discussed were cyber criminality, cyber intrusions. And one thing that Putin said, which hasn't been reported as far as I know, was that Russia would be ready to hand over cyber criminals to the United States if Washington did the same. If Washington did the same for the criminals that we have operating over there, the White House has said that President Joe Biden will bring up ransomware attacks emanating from Russia at the June 16th summit that they held in Geneva. Meanwhile, the Crimea, or the Ukraine, continues to be a sort of a flashpoint for the bad relations between the U.S. And Russia. We are, you could say that it's the, it's sort of it's an old conflict, really, when you think about it. The conflict is between two principles of world governance, between what's called sacred borders and self-determination. And each doctrine serves a purpose. Sacred borders, also known as territorial integrity, helps to protect a nation against invasion. Self-determination means that people get to choose their rulers. And it's nice when these principles coincide, when everyone likes being in their nation state, but it also it often happens that a country has an unhappy minority. And this is a result of the way nation states are often formed, when the borders are the sort of the frozen result of conquest or high-handed political struggles.
We have a caller.
We have a caller on the line. Good morning. You're on the air.
Oh, good morning, Per. What's more urgent, to talk about Ukraine and Putin and Biden, or to talk about the fate of the planet with climate change? Which should we talk about first?
Oh, well, which would you like to talk about first?
Well, right off the top of my head, there was a study not too long ago where they reported that 1% of the world's population, that would be the top 1%, their impact on the planet in terms of the carbon footprint and so on, is that 1% is double that of the bottom 50%.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes any sense. So,
well, sure, it makes a lot of sense.
Half the planet's damage to the environment is 3.5 billion people, in other words, have an impact, have a footprint that is less, that is half as much as the top 1%. It's as I try to explain it, it doesn't make any sense to me. But if you think about how dangerous the top 1%, the richest people with the fanciest lifestyles, with the biggest houses, with the most jet travel, with the lifestyle that they live, that's what's killing the world. And half the planet is virtually blameless in terms of getting us to where we are right now. On the subject of climate change, you're very right to say that solar technology, which many people that consider themselves green blithely just say, "Oh, we're gonna transit from this dirty technology that we've been using for a century or so to this bright, shiny green technology effortlessly. We'll just swing over to solar panels." You're absolutely right in bringing out the scarcity of materials necessary for those solar panels. The least attractive thing, the least popular thing that I can mention in this conversation is doing less, having a smaller footprint, having a simpler lifestyle. That's not really talked about. That's not in the culture. So the idea of, rather than electric cars, mass transit. You don't need...
What about bicycles?
Bicycles. I ride a bicycle. Bicycles are wonderful. There's so many things we could do to have a quality of life that would be less impactful. But the idea of maintaining an upper middle class vision of what the good life is in perpetuity is unsustainable. But that's not been part of the conversation because that's not really where the money is.
I think it will kind of make people rebel if they can't live what they consider the good life, then they're going to go in an ecological way. They'll continue doing it by destroying the planet. You know, I have to make people. I think people have to realize somehow that it's better to to have humanity stay around at one level of so-called civilization rather than go full blast and then kind of disappear in a what happens when a civilization ends? What happens when when all these minerals that we use up are gone, which, like I said, could happen any at various times within this century we live in. But go ahead.
Well, it's cognitive dissonance to think that we can maintain the current normal in the face of all the science that's telling us that the North Pole may not freeze in the summer. It may turn from a white reflective surface to a dark blue absorbent surface, which would be a major tipping point. We may have already reached that. I don't mean to be pessimistic. There was an article in the Oregonian, of all places, maybe 15 years ago. It surprised me. It was talking about coal, how many coal trains would be necessary to keep dryers drying, home dryers for your washing machine. And the idea was that you would have to burn up many, many, many carloads of coal just to dry your clothes. I don't want to sound silly, but I haven't used a dryer for years. I air dry clothes. I don't need clothes to be dry in 15 minutes. I have an abundance of clothing, so I can wait a day or two for them to dry. They'll dry in room temperature all year round, but it just takes a little longer. What I said would probably sound goofy to many people, but little changes like that are painless. But the impact of burning railroad cars full of coal, that's not painless. That's going to kill us. But the idea of grasping the thistle of saying, well, we actually need to start doing some belt tightening. We need to start dispensing with things that are unnecessary, that are wasteful, that are inefficient, and that are ultimately part of a lifestyle that will kill us. And then before I go, I should probably just mention that everything about Ukraine, Putin, and Crimea is nonsense. People have been reporting on that for years. The key name would be Victoria Nuland, handing out cookies to Ukrainian fascists and promoting the coup there. There was a woman yesterday, Caitlin Collins of Alabama, who boldly confronted Biden about Putin and what a rascal and what an untrustworthy person Putin is. I mean, that is laughably bad journalism, but it was a very good stunt in terms of capturing the level of ignorance, capturing the retro Russian hating stuff from it's been around all our lives. You probably had to deal with that anti-Soviet hysteria when you were a kid. Well, you'd say.
Oh, I remember that very well. It's very interesting about Putin. He Professor Stephen Cohn has passed away, but he was a guest on this show a couple of times, and he wrote a very article, Who Putin Is Not. And we have this kind of idea that Putin is sort of this puppet master pulling all the strings, which is not true at all. According to Cohen, Putin was kind of a, I don't know, I suppose you call him, he was sort of the person who made decisions between different contending groups in Russia. And so he was sort of trying to orchestrate the nation that he presumably ruled an iron fist. And so we have this misconception. It'd be very interesting. People should realize just how did Putin even get his start? What came before Putin? And that was
Boris Yeltsin.
Boris Yeltsin, who just practically destroyed Russia.
The United States was a huge supporter of Boris Yeltsin. Biden was talking about Russian election interference. That was laughable in the light of American interference in terms of propping up Boris Yeltsin interfering in Russian elections.
Mm-hmm.
Yeltsin, as you say, was a disaster for the Russian people. People were dying in the streets. People were freezing in the streets of Moscow. It was a very dark time during Yeltsin's period of rule. Whatever authoritarian tendencies people might ascribe to Putin, he's at least seen as an efficient leader who pulls the Russian people out of a very dark and miserable place under Yeltsin. And that context is completely missing from any American commentary. So Putin actually does enjoy quite a bit of support within Russia because they remember Yeltsin. So his authoritarianism, at least it's seen as efficient. At least it's seen as, yeah, and we were able to live in a livable country now. That's the last thing we need is to reignite the Cold War, and with the possible risk of it turning into a civilization-ending hot war. And we're not out of the woods yet with that. Nuclear war is still a problem. All the saber rattling against Russia and China is absolutely preposterous, completely unnecessary, and it's just stupid. Anyways, good talking with you, Per.
Well, thanks for your call. Do we have the number to call if people want to weigh in on this discussion? Number to call is 5 minutes left in the show, 503-231-8187.
We have Marilyn on the line.
And we have Marilyn on the line. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, pretty good. How are you?
Well, I've been following Putin for some time and going all the way back to Manafort and Giuliani and that crowd of clowns that are working with Putin to destroy our government. And Putin has a personal fortune of close to $1 trillion, which he...
I've heard that. How do they know that? I've always wondered about that. I mean, I've heard that Putin has a lot of wealth and these mansions, but how do we know it, you know?
Ask Navalny. Navalny has covered him. Ask Navalny. Look at Navalny's work. He's covered Putin's that thievery from... and privatizing all of the Russian assets. The Russian people do not love Putin, and they've been by the hundreds of thousands in the streets trying to get rid of him and trying to control him and get some voice in their government. Putin has the largest oil company. He derives his wealth from his oil and from aluminum and from privatizing Russian assets. And he's not a sweetheart. He's a KGB mafia don. That's what he is. He and his oligarchs that protect him and control the Russian people and the Russian
media. I've been wondering, you know, Putin supposedly has these big mansions, I don't know, more than one, and when does he actually get to live in them? You know, and when he retires, is he gonna live in his mansion on the Black Sea, or what's gonna happen? It doesn't add up to me.
Well,
you know, I'm not saying Putin's a nice guy, but
he's an evil man, and he's trying to destroy our country, and he's done a damn good job of it, obviously. And Navalny has written down all of his thievery and his wealth, and if you just go in line and look at what Navalny has written about Putin, and he's done it at great personal risk, and I'm totally shocked at anyone who thinks Putin has any purpose on this earth other than destruction. You got to look at his holdings in the Arctic. He's got a bunch of oil companies. Are you still there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. His purpose is to drill the Arctic for oil, and of course that's going to seal the fate of the planet. And
I might put in that we are sort of doing the same kind of thing ourselves. So, and we say Putin is drilling oil in the Arctic. Does that mean personally or on the big? You know, I mean, Russia has its Arctic oil wells, but I don't think they belong to Putin, presumably. But go ahead.
Well, that's where he derives his wealth. He wants to own the Ukraine government, which he has infiltrated with his Putin mafia, Putin-Russian mafia, which are the same thing. It's no different between Putin and the Russian mafia.
Well, you know, Ukraine is kind of an odd place in a way. It's I wish we had more time. We're getting near the end of the show.
Pipelines, oil pipelines go through Ukraine and supply mm-hmm. Europe, and that's what Putin wants, and that's why he's amassed 80,000 troops on the Ukraine border to take over Ukraine and their oil wealth and their pipelines.
Well, what happened in Ukraine was, Ukraine had an elected president, and he was forced out of office by the riots in Kiev. That's when Victoria Nuland was passing out the cookies. And so,
Excuse me, sir, if I may say something about mm-hmm. that, please.
Make it fast.
The guy that they pushed out was a Putin puppet.
Well, he was elected, though. He was elected.